Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Dude.
Episode 46. Dudes on Hockey.
Rest in peace.
I'm Mike. That's Doug.
San Jose Sharks, 2008-2009. Yeah. You are officially dead.
Dead and near buried.
Oh, man. This is... Dude, after game five, I honestly didn't think we'd be having this conversation today. I thought that we were going to win last night and that somehow we were going to pull this off. And obviously, we were naive.
Just too hopeful, I guess. Just thoroughly outplayed again by the Ducks, thoroughly outplayed by Hiller.
There's so many things to talk about. I know we have a long list of discussion points of today's game.
Well,
but one thing that are of yesterday's game, but one thing I think that we can't get lost in here is, and I think that Dan Boyle said this in the post game comments, is the Ducks were better.
That's right.
The Ducks were a better team. And if you think the Ducks were an 8 seed, then you're crazy.
Yeah.
Because I think you brought this up before.
I can't get enough of hockey. I was watching the Game 7s tonight. You know what Billy Jaffe said?
What?
He said that the Ducks were the best number 8 seed in the modern era.
I think he's right.
That's what he said.
He's absolutely right, because this team, while we enjoyed their demise at the beginning of the year, they were banged up. They weren't functioning at full strength. They made a lot of trades that at the deadline, I think that we made fun of them a little bit for maybe dismantling their third line, trading away Kunitz. But, Murray looks like a genius right now, and he's kind of brought new life, kept the important pieces together. He did a great job. They're super smart in going with Jonas Hiller, who was a total world beater.
Yeah. .956 save percentage. Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. And we'll see if he can keep it up against Detroit. I'm really curious. I don't know what's going to make me feel better, dude.
Yeah.
Are you going to feel better if Hiller goes in there and totally stones them in game one, or if the Red Wings just trash them? I think I'm going to feel worse if the second happens.
Yeah. I think I want to see the Ducks do well now, because that would sort of reinforce the point that the Ducks are a lot better than people give them credit for, a lot better than their seeding dictated.
Well, they're at the 5 seed minimum. If you were to reseed them, they should have been the 5. Not based on their record, but based on their overall talent going into the postseason. So that certainly is not an excuse. And I've seen some message boards and some people saying, the Sharks, well, you can call them a bunch of chokers. They lost to a pack of losers. That's just not true.
That's just not the case.
This is, a team that was 2 years removed from winning the Stanley Cup with a lot of their important pieces still in place. They're not a pack of losers. They're a damn good hockey team.
That's right. And before we get into all the different things that happened with the series, I got to say that number 46 was Steve Bernier, first of all.
Great.
Which is fitting.
We could have used him.
Yeah.
He's still playing.
I know. He's still playing.
I'm sure he's somewhere laughing. I bet Craig Gervais doesn't feel too bad right now either.
Well, Craig Gervais sitting at home. He's playing golf.
Well, that's true.
But anyway, I want to say what we are going to talk about, and more importantly, what we're not going to talk about. What we're not going to talk about is we're not going to do the philosophical discussion about who should get fired and who should leave and what the Sharks should do and how they should blow it up. It's too early for that.
It's way too early.
We gotta wait a while. There might be some interesting shows coming up for Dudes on Hockey, but we're not going to be tackling those grand issues today. We're going to be talking about individual issues of the series. May end up touching on some larger Sharks issues. But for the most part, I have a little list of things here. Number one on the list has to be Joe Thornton. He led the Sharks in points in the postseason. Maybe that might surprise some people without looking at a stat sheet to see that. He had 5 points, wow, in 6 games. That's actually more or less along Joe's line for postseason production. -3, not great, but pretty much all the Sharks were minus. Joe Thornton took a lot of heat, and I don't know what to say. He wasn't there for the media after Game 6, which hurt his cause. It hurt his cause from a public relations standpoint. And I can understand if he was really depressed and upset, and I'm sure he was all of those things, but people are going to point to that specifically and say, this is why Joe is not a leader. This is why Joe should not be on the Sharks. And I don't know if I agree with that, but I can see why they would say that. So Joe, he played like crazy in Game 5. He certainly tried to make a statement at the start of Game 6.
Absolutely he did.
And he deserves all the credit in the world for that. And I think he was trying, but it's not all on him.
No.
I think there's a pretty long list of players that I would put ahead of Joe that I would point at first.
I agree. That you can't point the finger at Joe Thornton. If you watch Game 5 and 6 and you say he's the reason why we lost this series, I think you're flat out wrong.
You're an idiot.
And I've seen some blog posts with that title today that right. I didn't even bother to read because it's wrong. He busted his ass last night and he played really hard in Game 5. And was he four games too late?
Yeah.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. But you know, you can't say the guy didn't go out there and he put everything on the ice last night and for the last two games. And that's the knock on the Sharks, is that, you know, until they wait until they get backed into a corner, and then you've got Joe's full attention, I suppose, in the postseason. But I think you're right, dude. You look at the top line and Joe's lack of production, but then you look down at the Ducks, they were getting goals from all over the place.
Yeah,
really.
Like their second line had a bunch of points too.
Even though the first line was clearly dominant, mm-hmm. and ours wasn't. Joe can't bear the brunt or the burden of this disappointment.
That's right. And there's a lot of guys that are getting a lot of minutes that weren't producing. And if you're going to point the finger at Joe, I understand that. He's the guy making all the money. He's the guy wearing the A. And he deserves criticism maybe more than his fair share, but he certainly doesn't deserve all of it.
No.
And the other guy you point at, of course, everyone's always going to point at, the guy who doesn't say much, the guy who gives perhaps the most boring post-game interview in the history of hockey, Patrick Marleau, said they were better. We didn't get it done. Insert platitude here. 3 points, even. Patrick Marleau, again, or this time at least, doesn't come up big for the Sharks, but no one came up big for the Sharks, really. Nobody.
Nobody. And this talk of, you know, stripping him of the captaincy. I mean, I think the captaincy, honestly, and I don't know how you feel about this, dude. I think it's overrated.
Absolutely.
You know.
Totally agree with
because,
you.
Because, so he didn't stand up in the locker room before the game and rip his shirt off and like, you know, carve a W for win in his chest and say, we're going to go win. You know, follow me to the jungle, Braveheart.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it. I don't think that happens, and I don't know, dude. Like, I just think, just because he wears the C, doesn't mean that everybody has to look at him and go, well, Marlo's not there. You know, talking up on the bench on the game. Well, I'm not going to be into the game today.
Right. So these guys who are all been playing hockey for 20 years, most of whom are making millions of dollars, they're going to look at a guy sitting next to him on the. On the bench, they're going to see that he has an extra letter on his jersey and say, he's not playing hard. That means I'm not playing hard. That's really how this goes? Come on. Give me a break. That's not how it goes.
And there was a little interesting tidbit that kind of was floated at the end that we've been speculating that Marlowe's injured. He didn't totally answer that question.
He said, I'll tell you in a couple days
I'll
or something.
I'll tell you in a couple days. We've thought something looked a little bit off with him this entire series. He might be playing with a serious injury that we don't know about.
That's right.
So that, not that it's not an excuse, and they will never use it as an excuse.
But it could be a reason.
Absolutely.
There's a difference.
If you're out there playing, you know, with, you know, a broken bone or, you know, a torn ligament in your knee or your ankle, and you're out there gutting it out, of course that's going to affect your play.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not making excuses for these guys because
right.
It's disappointing, and we're disappointed in what happened.
And we think they should have won the series. We think they were the better team going into the series. It didn't prove out that way.
But these guys, they got to get some help. And, you know, I don't want to jump topics on you, dude, so keep going.
Third up, Nabby. Nabby deserves some heat. And, you know, he was out there and said some things after the game. He said they were the better team, right? That was the truest thing maybe said all night.
Sure.
He said they were the better team. Under 900 save percentage, 890. You compare that with Hiller with a 956. If I had to point to one thing in the series, that's the difference in the series, right? One single matchup. There's so many different things going on with those, with all the games, you know, with Ducks pressure and their top line and all these other things. If I had to point to one thing in the series, that would be the thing I would point to.
My giant teal foam finger is pointed directly at Nabby. As, you know what, man? You got to make some big saves. And he gave up some extremely weak playoff goals.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting thing. You know, while Nabby is just completely entrenched as the number one here, you know, when Theodor sucked in game one, he was out.
That's right.
In Washington. Now, I'm not saying that would have made a difference, but we've seen Boucher put together some pretty sweet outings. The team plays harder in front of him, I think, because they have maybe a little bit less confidence.
Mm-hmm.
He's not the flashy marquee name, but he does hold the record for most shutout. Consecutive shutouts.
Mm-hmm.
Hindsight's 2020, right?
Maybe that was a coaching thing that maybe I would have done instead is if Nabby gives up the third or fourth goal, maybe Boucher gets some time.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Or maybe Boucher gets a game,
mm-hmm.
and you see how the team responds. Because Nabby made some big saves last night. He made some big saves in every game, but he didn't make the biggest save.
That's right.
And he gave up weak goals.
He gave up another 35 or 40-foot wrist shot goal to Ryan Getzlaff. Again, put the game out of reach. They were leading by two, but that was the fourth goal. That was the dagger in the heart. The Sharks got a goal at the time when the Ducks scored their fourth goal. May have had a different outcome, maybe not, but it certainly would have changed how that game was going to be played the last 5 or 6 minutes. And Getzlaff had an open look about 40 feet out in between the circles and buried it. Wrist shot. No right. Slap shot. That's one I think Nabby should have had.
One thing I don't see on the list, dude, that I want to bring up.
Okay.
Special teams.
Yeah.
The power play. Last night, the game, it was in our hands. And I had said, funny enough, the key for the game last night for me, keep the Ducks at bay for the first 10 minutes. Well, the team that came out in the first 10 minutes looking for blood was the Sharks.
Mm-hmm.
They had the opportunity. The Ducks took three penalties. We had the opportunity to make the game 3-0. And it didn't happen. And that's why they lost. They had the chance. And once the Ducks got out of those 10 minutes, it was over.
That's right. The reason they lost in the first round last year was because they got in penalty trouble, and the Dallas Stars took advantage of that, and they played the same script to a certain extent against the Sharks this year. They took some penalties at inopportune times, and the Sharks couldn't cash in. So the Ducks could play as hard as they play with impunity because they knew it was unlikely they were going to get penalized. You know, it wasn't going to bite them in the ass when they took a penalty.
Your best penalty killer is your goalie, right?
Yeah.
So Hiller just completely murdered us. And I hate that guy now.
Yeah.
I hate him.
Yeah.
I'm going to try and find a way to get his green card revoked.
Okay, next item. The second line combined 4 points for the entire series. Klo had 2 points. The other two guys had 1 point. Mihalik had his first and only point in the final game with his goal. He was in the right spot. I'll give him credit for that. Pavs went from a 56.3 face-off winning percentage in the regular season to 47.
He got punked by Marchand. He got punked.
Total nosedive in the face-off circle. And that was something the Sharks were very good at in the regular season, and they just weren't in the postseason. Another thing that they got dominated at.
This was maybe one of the most surprising things, was that I figured that our forward depth was going to be what put us over the edge in this series. Our second line, that Klo, Mihalik, and
Pavelski
were not going to be better than Marchand, Ebbett, and
Solani.
Come on. I mean, really?
Yeah.
Disappointing. Like, I would point the finger at those guys before I would go pointing at Joe Thornton.
Mm-hmm. It's
Joe Thornton, of course they're going to key on Joe Thornton. No one else is going to score.
That's right.
Stop Joe Thornton, stop the Sharks.
In the last two games, Joe had to play against their best line, which is the best line of the series by far.
By far.
And Joe still had the most points in the series. So you put the second line up against Ryan Getzlaff, Corey Perry, and Bobby Ryan, and I bet the second line would have looked even worse.
Sure. That I can't explain it. I don't know why they were so invisible. I can't notice or think of a reason why, other than I just didn't feel like, you know, Joe Pavelski not winning faceoffs, Mahalik, except maybe some flashes in game six, ironically enough, where he had some space to operate and was able to use his speed. And Ryan Clough, dude, I really didn't notice him much at all.
Mm-hmm.
And for someone who was awesome in the playoffs last year, I was pretty disappointed. I thought that he would thrive in the physical nature of this series.
Right. You see him after the whistle, didn't see him between the whistles.
Nope.
All right, I'm gonna throw in a little something. This is a pet theory of mine. Zero substantiation for it. To me, the way the Ducks played tempo-wise, the way the Ducks played positionally, it looked like the Sharks had a problem with conditioning, to me. Jamie Baker says it all the time in the telecast. You hear commentators say it. You got to win 6-foot battles. You got to win 10-foot battles. That means you get up on your toes and you go, go, go like you're sprinting. And the Sharks could not win those battles. And I wonder if it was a conditioning problem. Were the Sharks out of shape? Were they tired? I mean, everybody's seen Miracle, right? You know, the USA hockey team versus Russia. And they said, the way we're going to compete against Russia is we're going to be out-conditioned. We're going to be faster than them. We're going to have more endurance than them. We're going to be quicker than them. And it looked like the Sharks were behind the Ducks on all three issues. And I wonder if their conditioning just wasn't as good. It seemed like the Ducks looked fresher and sharper at all different times of the game. And the Sharks looked great in Game 5, and they were sharp, and they went out and they won. But Game 6, they couldn't keep up that intensity. Could it be because they just, frankly, weren't in as good a condition as the Ducks? I don't know.
It's possible. I don't know how we'd ever know that, but it's possible. Yeah. That could be possible. The thing that, you know, people kind of play down is, oh, well, momentum can be built up just in a game, you make your own momentum.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's trash. You know, the Sharks backdoored their way into the playoffs. They didn't play well in the last 6 weeks of the season. They were mediocre. They were dropping games at home. They were beating bad teams barely.
Mm-hmm.
And they just looked kind of out of it and not like themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And they did have a lot of injuries. But still, the style of play, it was off. They were off. And the Ducks found their stride at that same time.
That's right.
So the Ducks are coming in full speed ahead. We're kind of backing into the playoffs. The two collided, and the Ducks' momentum, just they were able to take them over. And I almost wonder if Detroit sitting at home for a week, I think the Ducks are going to win game one in that series.
Mm.
Because they've got everything going their way. Hiller's playing like a madman. Detroit sat at home. They've been waiting. They're going to go out there, and if the Ducks score first, I think Detroit might figure out what happened to us, at mm-hmm. least in game one.
That's right. All right. Next item, some people have floated. Doug Wilson, is his job on the line?
No.
No. That's the most ludicrous thing I've heard in this offseason. I understand people are upset. I understand people are frustrated and irritated. Lord knows we are too. But you fire the guy who traded for Dan Boyle. You fire the guy who traded 3 spare parts for Joe Thornton. You fire a guy who signed Marlowe and Thornton for under market value. That would be the dumbest thing the Sharks could do this offseason. If I had to pick one dumb thing for them to do, that would be it.
I don't even think that's on the radar. He's such an important part of this franchise, of the identity of the franchise. He's practically part of the ownership group.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, Jameson and Wilson operate very closely. I don't think that's going to happen. I can understand people being able to point at some signings as, you know, bad signings. You know, the Mahalik signing doesn't look fantastic right now.
No, it doesn't.
You know, and I've even seen people write about, well, what a waste of money, Rob Blake. What do you mean, what a waste of money, Rob Blake? He led the team in shots in the series. He had, you know, 4 points. He was good. He was good. Yeah, he was a -5. Okay, whatever. Everybody was a minus.
Yeah.
I think the whole team was a -36 or something.
Travis
stupid.
Moan was -4.
Travis Moan, if we want to go to him,
right.
The third line, to me, was the worst line.
Mm-hmm.
They were terrible.
Yeah.
They didn't look interested. And when you don't have a third line, the Sharks needed a third line to go against their top line.
Mm-hmm.
And they Where didn't have was it. Travis Moan, dude? Where was he? He was nowhere
know.
To be found. It was irritating. I noticed from the poll question last week where people were voting on whether you keep Moan or Greer for the same money. It was 8-0 Travis Moan.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, right now, I'd say keep neither.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. Was he not interested, dude, because he was playing against his former team?
I don't know. I can't imagine he would do that. But you see some of these checks and he goes into the corner and he doesn't just rail people. He sort of pushes them away. It's individual moments in the game and you can't judge a player by that, by like two different anecdotal things you notice.
We've seen him beat major ass in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like, he is one of the hardest hitting players in the NHL. We saw it in the regular season. I didn't see it in the playoffs. I didn't see it. And I wonder if that had anything to do with it, if maybe this was the worst possible matchup for him because he just couldn't mentally get up for
trying to beat the hell out of his friends.
Yeah.
Literally. I mean, that's really what it was about.
It seemed to me like that was a problem. And, you know, Mike Greer has declined the last year and a half. And, you know, without getting into roster speculation, that's a very interesting one to think about.
So
Doug Wilson is safe.
I think he's safe. Let's talk about unrestricted free agents and restricted free agents. So here's the list. Unrestricted, we have Greer, Roenick, Moan, Lemieux, Blake, Semenoff, Huskins, Kyle McLaren, Tom Cavanaugh, Ryan Vesey. So that's the list with Worcester. There's other players, but these are the ones that really have any shot of playing any NHL games, really.
Can I ask you, dude, and without getting into further detail on all the players, can you pick one player out of that list that you think is an absolute must-keep? If you're Doug Wilson, price not being an issue here. Who do you keep?
You keep Jeremy Roenick. That's what I think. I think you keep Jeremy Roenick, especially since the price is going to be reasonable. He's not going to make $5 million. I mean, Blake would be great to keep, but I worry about price for him. I worry that the ownership group's not going to be willing to spend the cap next year. So of all these guys, if I have to pick one guy, I pick Roenick.
I would pick Rob Blake out of that group. I think he was a very important part of all the things that went right this year.
Mm-hmm.
Provided stability with Vlasic, who, you know, speaking of disappointing in the playoffs.
Yeah, wow. What
didn't happened? Play well. -6. He was overmatched. He couldn't cut it. And
for a guy that never seems to panic, he made a lot of panic-type moves that is very strange for him to make. Bad clears, bad passes off the boards, rushing when he didn't need to rush. They got in his dome. I think they got in Vlasic's dome somehow. I don't know what it was.
It was surprising. But, you know, when you look at, you know, the Sharks have some young defensemen that maybe are on the horizon with Nick Petrecki and Derek Jocelyn, and maybe Mike Moore is... These guys are going to be looking to crack into the lineup next year. You know, I don't want to jump ahead too, but you might figure that. I don't know if Brad Lukowicz's roster spot is at certainty for next year either. But
I thought he played pretty stable. I thought he played a little bit better than Vlasic.
Yeah, but I just wonder if they can do better.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, restricted. These are guys means that... if they go someplace else, then the Sharks will get compensation depending on how much the other team pays for them. So the Sharks have to make what's called a qualifying offer, which is they basically have to offer them the same salary they made this year. And then if they decide to sign with another team, the Sharks get compensation. So that list is Klo, Gotch, Mitchell, TJ Fox, Thomas Greiss, Taylor Dakers, Lukasz Kaspar, Mike Morris, Riley Armstrong, and Brad Staubitz. So... I think the one guy you got to keep is Torrey Mitchell. Torrey Mitchell was maybe the only Shark that played above expectations in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's a no-brainer. I think there's another one on here that's a no-brainer. He's the franchise goalie of the future is Thomas Greiss.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And the way he's played this year in the AHL and the way he's playing right now in the playoffs, that, you know, he is a guaranteed signing.
So that the big... The fact that we didn't talk about him yet is Ryan Klo. That's strange. I know a lot of people said during the season, this guy we got to keep. Clearly had a disappointing playoffs. I don't think you make a long-term roster decision based on how a guy played over 6 games.
No.
Of course, it doesn't make you happy.
But the money's going to come into play here, and he's restricted, and that is in the Sharks' favor. But as we sort of progress in the next 2 months, as we kind of break down the roster and different decisions that they need to make, I think the money is going to play a major factor as far as, is anyone going to make an offer to him? Do you take the picks instead? I mean, one thing that, as we're kind of looking ahead to the offseason, is I still think there's got to be some way Doug Wilson's going to get that first round pick back. Mm-hmm. They've got nothing.
So how
do you get that pick back?
We'll be talking about that in the coming weeks, but Ryan Clough, I think you're right. I think there's going to be some sort of tipping point where if they can sign him for under X dollars, they will. And if it's over X dollars, then they may take the risk, see if he gets an offer sheet, and then maybe let him go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then make the decision on whether to match or not. Because, frankly, a lot of teams this offseason, probably led by the Phoenix Coyotes, are not going to want to be throwing around a lot of money, and they might catch a break again and get him for pretty reasonable amount of dollars.
Yeah, we have to remember, Sharks fans, that Clough really dragged this out last year, too. Like, he was the last Shark to sign. Be interesting to see if that happens again.
Mm-hmm. That works against him. So, all right, we're at the end. Let's talk a little bit about the other series. So the rest of the series are done. Game 7 of Carolina and the Devils are going on right now, and the Rangers and the Capitals is going on right now. Don't know the outcome of either of those games, but what do you think about second round matchups? Who you got, you know, from a preliminary standpoint?
Well, I can tell you who I'm going to be rooting for.
Okay.
I talked a little bit about last year that if I could pick another team that I would want to follow, it would be the Chicago Blackhawks. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be watching and following their games. I like that team. And I think they have a good shot to beat Vancouver.
Yeah, I think so too.
If they can get some good goaltending. And then if they draw Detroit, I think anything goes as far as that goes. Mm-hmm. I didn't think it was going to be the Blackhawks' time, but if Anaheim can really stick it to the Red Wings and give them problems like they gave us troubles in Detroit, whether they come out of it or not, they might be too banged up to really compete with Chicago.
And it looks like Boston has the inside track in the East right now. The one team I think could beat anybody, and the one team actually would be really helped by the outcome of tonight's game. If the Rangers win tonight, I really like the Penguins over whoever they face in the next round, whether it is the Devils or the Canes. So that would be a great draw for Pittsburgh. And I think if the Rangers win tonight, I would put Pittsburgh with even money with Boston to come out of the East.
It's very possible we could be looking at a repeat of last year's Stanley Cup Finals.
That's true. I didn't think about that, but you're absolutely right.
Very possible. And then I'd be rooting for the Penguins. Let Marian Hossa cry on the other end this time.
I think that's going to do it for this week's Dudes on Hockey. We're not going to stop blogging. We're not going to stop podcasting because our love for hockey continues year-round, summertime, wintertime, and in the fall. So I hope you'll continue to listen to us, and I hope you'll continue to send us questions to our email address or read the blog at sharks.hockeyanalysis.com. And we'll be back again next week. Talk to you later.
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.